Well, I grew up around music. My family, I had two uncles who had a band when I was like, I guess, 4 or 5 years old, and they had a radio show.
That's down in Georgia?
It's in Valdosta, Georgia, from South Georgia. And when I was 9 years old, my ambition at that time, I always knew I wanted to be a singer. Music was just my passion. And I wanted to be a steel guitar player in their band because I idolized my uncles. They had such a good time and they were wonderful. And so I started taking steel guitar lessons. And then my uncle told me, I was always singing, my uncle told me one day, he said, you know, you're a pretty good little singer for a kid. And he would let me sing on the radio show. And that was fun. And then my family moved to Marietta when I was about 13. I got a little group together there. And then when I was 14 or 15, I had a show out of East Point, which is right outside of Atlanta, called the Georgia Jubilee. And what they would do was bring down a Grand Ole Opry star on Friday, and they would tape the show and play it back on Saturday. Well, some of the regulars, just to supplement the show, was Jerry Reed was a regular, and Ray Stevens was a regular, and Joe South. And I think Mac Davis was back around in those days. And I went to school with Jerry Reed's girlfriend, Priscilla, who is now his wife. And I asked her how they got on the show, and she said, you got an audition. So I went down to audition, and I met Freddie Weller there. He was auditioning the same day, and he and I made the show. And we all became really good friends, and we were all just eager beavers and ambitious as the Dickens.
Now, you're how old now?
I'm 15 or 16. And then when the Jubilee broke, dissolved, I moved to Savannah and started working down there. And then we needed a guitar player, so I called Joe. He came down, and he and I just plotted every day on how we were going to do this. And
called Joe South.
Yes, Joe. I'm sorry, Joe South. And finally, we got the attention of Bill Lowry, and he thought we had something and kind of took us over.
Before long, it was down in the Boondocks?
About a year later, yeah. I think I was 18 or 19 when I got that.
Were you surprised with the success of Cherry Hill Park?
Yes, because I did not like that record.
Really?
I should admit that, but I didn't.
Why didn't you?
I liked the song. At that time, I was going through it.
Now, this is the late 60s.
Right. Now, about 1968 or 69, I can't remember 69. The exact... Joe South wrote a song called Games People Play.
Won him a Grammy.
Yes. Well, I went crazy. Joe and I were working together, and he wrote the songs. I sang them. And I said, Joe, that's the greatest thing you've ever written in your life. It's terrific. And he said, you like it that much? I went, yeah, let's get the studio tomorrow. We're going and cut that. He said, forget it. I'm cutting it myself. And he did. And he should have, because he's a great singer and a great writer and a great artist. But meantime, he had his own career going by this time, so I had to look around for another producer. And Buddy Bowie, who is a great producer, he has produced all the Classics 4 records. He wrote most of the stuff. The Atlanta Rhythm Section he produced. The drummer with the Rhythm Section at the time was Robert Nix, and he and Bill Gilmore wrote the song. Well, we were in those days, we're all kids, and we hung out together, and we just hung out at Bill's studio all the time. And if somebody would write a song, we'd listen to it, and you know, just a lot of camaraderie there. Well, they called me in the hall and said, listen to the song we wrote. And it sounded great. I really liked it a lot. But when we started cutting...
You're talking about Cherry Hill Park.
Right, Cherry Hill Park, I'm sorry. And but I don't know if it's because I was used to the way Joe produced or whatever. It just didn't hit me. And in fact, I got so depressed. In those days, you'd cut maybe one song at a time, not like a whole... It was a singles market. And there was a railroad track that ran by the studio. And I remember going out and throwing rocks at the track about 3 in the morning going, if that's a hit, I'm a typewriter. You know, I just don't think it's going to be a hit. And I was wrong again. That was my baby. I believe in that record more than anything I've ever believed in a long time.
Why?
When I heard the demo, before the guy even started singing, I just heard those doo-wops. And I remember coming out of the chair and going, boy, that's it. And the guy goes, well, let's hear what the guy sounds like or what the song says. In fact, we had to change the lyrics because some of the words didn't make sense. But he just had that great feel to it. And that's the kind of music I grew up listening to. You know,
some of the words didn't make sense, like what?
Well, the original lyrics were, the first verse is intact. The second verse went, someone loaned me 10. Like $10, and I thought, what does that mean? You're loaning me $10, won't you help a friend? I always repay every cent I own. So I said, this doesn't make sense with the rest of the record, the rest of the song. So we changed it to, I Know It's Gonna Hurt, You Treated Me Like, which are great lyrics, by the way. You treated me like dirt. So we changed the second verse. We cut that. What we did, we saved $800, and we caught it. There used to be a train that ran between Savannah and Atlanta. We caught the train about 6 o'clock that morning, got there, and we cut I Knew You When, Down in the Boondocks, and two other things for B-sides. For $800, we cut in a schoolhouse with a three-track machine and got two top 10 records out of that.
In a schoolhouse?
Yeah, schoolhouse. Bill Lowry had bought this old schoolhouse and converted it into a studio, and the echo chamber was his old septic tank that was underneath the school. I mean, that was the put a microphone down, and that was the echo. And it was just amazing. Now you couldn't get a guy to go for coffee for that. You know. That record's the one I really thought was going to do well, and it didn't. It was, a top 20 record. I'm not sure the number now.
What goes through a performer? Okay, why does a performer think a record's going to do well?
It's just personal taste, I guess.
Good feel to it.
Yeah, you can't second-guess the public. I found that out a long time ago. To me, at that time, the Righteous Brothers were really doing it. They had Lost That Loving Feeling and the two records out of Soul and Inspiration. And it was that type of record. And I was really surprised when it didn't do as well as... In fact, I thought it was a better record than Down in the Boondocks.